And you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. It is Tuesday, June 29th. I'm live in the studio today. Secret is I played some automated shows the last few Tuesdays because I was in Kentucky. But I'm back, and I have some clips from that trip, just home to see family. For today's show, I've got a 7-minute clip from the Kentucky Mountain Laurel 5K in Pineville, Kentucky, what the runners had to say, some of them. And I have a clip with my niece, Christina Moyer, talking about catching a rattlesnake and carrying it around in her insulated plastic lunchbox till she found a better place to release it. And then I have a little clip of my next door neighbors and their soap making venture. That's my next door neighbors in Kentucky. And then also an East Hampton clip from last week of Priya Green painting a mural on the side of, I think it's East Hampton Feed and Seed on Mechanic Street in East Hampton. I ran into her when I was doing my pedal people route last week. So I think we'll start with, this is from the Kentucky Mountain Laurel 5K in Pineville, Kentucky. It's their annual big festival. And they had, a road race. So I chased people down after they'd finished running. They were too tired to get away from my recorder.
How was the race?
It was good. I mean, I got second, he got first. So.
Yeah. Do you race together a lot?
No, not too much.
Are you related?
Mm-mm. No.
Where are y'all from?
Corbin?
Lately.
Do you have a favorite length?
5K.
5K and 2 miles. 10Ks.
What was your time today?
1934, I think.
2005.
How long have you been running?
I've been running for about 6 years.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 15.
What's your favorite part about running?
Fun. Yeah. I like the competition. Yeah. And I like the environment.
Yeah.
And
it's like the trophies there I can win on.
The trophies. Do you usually win?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
Oh, do you want to introduce yourselves?
Oh, I'm Christopher Rose.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Walter Peavley.
So you just got done the Mountain Laurel 5K.
Mm-hmm.
How was it for you?
It was okay. I've not ran in months. So,
like,
this is like, I've not ran. I think this is maybe the third time in like 4 months that I've ran.
Like, literally?
Literally, yes, literally.
Are you going to be sore?
Oh, yeah, I'm sore now.
What inspired you to run today?
Get out of the house and have something to do.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Did you used to run more?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah. How did you get into running?
Oh, Lord. I've ran my whole life, ever since, like, grade school. Ran middle school and high school, and, you know, just off my whole life.
Uh-huh. I used to run a lot, but I had to take, kind of quick because the injury kind of things. Have you had any injuries you had to take time off for?
Yes. Bad knees, bad hips, degenerative discs in my back, arthritis. So, yeah, that's why I've not been running.
Yeah.
Just getting back into it.
Yeah. That's cool. Where are you from?
Originally Middlesboro, but we've been in Indiana for the last 20 years, so we just moved back.
All right. You want to introduce yourself?
My name's Jennifer Adkins.
Awesome. Thanks. Anything else you want to say?
That's it.
Good. Age? That's okay.
49.
How was the run for you?
It was really good.
Yeah? Do you run a lot?
Not a whole lot, but I used to run a lot.
How old are you?
44.
You ran with the flag the whole way in the flagpole.
Yes.
How was that?
I usually about every race try to run with it. Your arm gets a little tired, and it'll beat on your collarbone. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about what it means to you?
Yes. I spent 11 years in between the Army and the Army National Guard, and I spent 4 years active duty Marine Corps. I have 2 sons that serve in the Army now. My brother actually passed away while serving in the military, so I try to always carry it just to honor them and everyone that was served in the military before me.
Do you mind introducing yourself and tell me where you're from?
Yes, my name's Gary Ferguson. I'm actually from Harlan, Kentucky.
I'm Marsha Morton.
Where are you from?
La Follette, Tennessee.
Jerry Tipton, Corinton, Tennessee.
Just like your shirt says, Corinton Running Club. How about you?
I'm Rick Root from Harrogate, Tennessee.
What motivated y'all to come out here today?
Well, I've done this race about 3 years ago, and it's flat, and I liked it, and small town race, close to home.
Marcia sent me up here. She was telling me about it. Said the course is flat, and I wanted to have a decent time today. Now I'm real happy with the race, and kind of happy with my time. I enjoyed it.
What'd you get?
Let's see. I think it's 33:14.
All right.
Yeah, that's what run I've been doing lately.
Good for you.
Well, I ran the Shamrock 5K here was 2 or 3 years ago, and this is sort of, well, I was born in Pineville over here at the hospital, so it's sort of like, when you know, you sort of symbolic type of run, and I got a lot of family here, done a lot of genealogy research in this town. I have relatives that are buried over here, all kinds of that, so it's sort of, it's sort of a special place.
Okay, this question's burning in my head. So is running painful? Is running competitively painful?
Good question. Marshall has said she's really
competitive. If you push yourself, it is. I used to teach PE, and I told my girls, I said, buddy, even Olympic athletes hurt. You know, you have to push yourself to get your best out of yourself.
Yeah. Anybody else want to say anything?
It kind of seems like it gets easier if you're in better shape. It seems like if you're out of shape and you struggle, it's a little harder. You feel a bit worse at the end of the day than you do if you're in a decent shape.
Yeah, well, to me, I just started this about 6 years ago. And how I got started, I started riding bikes first. And somebody asked me one day, how come you ride on the side of the road back, get run over and killed? And painful, all this endurance that you have to go through. Well, I got to thinking, what made me start it? Well, what happened, my dad, before he died and passed away, he handed off his bike to me. And so I took his bike, put it up against the deck where at my house, and it was sitting there rusting away. And so I said, out of memorandum, I'm going to ride this little bike, the Walmart bike. So I rode that little bike around, and it felt like my dad was saying, hey man, that's my bike. How does it feel? How's it ride? And so it's like, and every runner knows this, when you're by yourself, you think a lot. So it's like, that was my motivation. So that started the whole cascade, got me a faster bike, started riding road bikes, started running. And so that inspiration to me is what, you know, running's painful and all that, but it's sort of like you have a buddy with you that motivates you. And so you can ride and you can run. Today, I rode for my uncle who passed, or run today, that, so I used my uncle who passed away the other day. And sort of like, every time I go out and do something, I say, I'm doing it for this person. Ride for those who can't, inspire those who can. So that's what, it hurts, but that helps.
That was going to lead to my next question. Like, what goes through your head when you're running?
What goes through your head? It's according to where I'm running. Sometimes, am I going to live from that dog chasing me? I can think of things when I'm running that come to my head that I don't think of. You know, if you've got an issue, something going on, you need to sort out. You can sort it out running.
I'd say you're pushing yourself. Just, you know, trying to just, you know, push yourself, you know, just as hard as you can, and you're enjoying the scenery around you sometimes. I'm getting to the finish line.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot. Anything else you want to add? Do you care if I ask your ages? Do you care if I ask your ages?
I'm 77.
60.
55.
Is running through my mind. All right. Woo. Those were runners from the Mountain Laurel 5K in Pineville, Kentucky, when I was there in, I think it was May 29th, a month ago.
Where I'm running to is running through my mind. Always on the run, am I running out of time? Darkness in my way, I pray the sun will shine. Starting from the bottom, and that was underlined by the place that I'm from. Sometime is undivine. I hear the songs of freedom, and they're running through my mind. Close my eyes, imagine a place next to me where I no longer can be labeled a refugee. Destiny, cause somewhere down these dark roads, we lost the tribe, but we found our souls. Cold rain, all pain, I left along the way. We fight through the night just to find a stronger day.
From the place that I know I'm, which
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Next up on today's show, we got, what do we have? All right, here is my niece, Christina Moyer.
What would you have done if it started coming your direction?
I had boots on.
Well, I could have gone higher than your boots.
I can run really fast.
Well, I think a mad rattlesnake might be faster.
If I'm running full speed, he's not going to be able to strike above my boots.
Oh, okay. I won't trust him. I'll take your word for it.
So we're at family reunion, and I overheard Christina telling some story about catching a snake. This is my niece, Christina Moyer.
Hello, everybody.
Where do you live?
I live in Castlewood, Virginia. So that's far southwest Virginia in the Appalachian Mountains.
And so was this story about a snake?
So my friend and I went hiking, and we got a pretty early start, so we were out on the trail. It was probably 10 or 11, and it's a pretty popular trail to a swimming hole. It's called Devil's Bathtub, and it's a really beautiful place. And anyway, but
it's in southwestern Virginia.
Yes, it is. It's one of the more crowded trails around in our area because a lot of the places we hike are pretty secluded. But we had been on the trail for probably 20 minutes or so, and then we see some people up on the trail, and they're like, stop, stop, there's a rattlesnake. And I was like, okay, because my dad's a biologist, and rattlesnakes aren't very common where we live, and most people assume, if they don't know snakes, they'll assume anything other than a black snake is something poisonous. And so I was kind of hesitant at first, but we kind of passed a couple people and got closer to get a better look at it, and sure enough, it was a big rattlesnake. It surprised me how huge it was, but it definitely had a rattle. And there were some people trying to get it off the trail. I mean, it wasn't on the trail, but it was definitely in striking distance of the trail, so people walking by could be bitten if it decided to strike. But people were trying to use a stick and push it away, and it wasn't really having it. I mean, it wasn't really aggressively. It wasn't striking necessarily as much as just like, no, I don't want to move. This is my spot. So finally, it curled up probably about 4 feet from the trail. And there was this lady with her two boys and a dog. And the guy who was trying to get it off with a stick, he was like, all right, say, you guys can come on by. So they went by. And then my friend Lydia and I, we were kind of standing there looking at it, trying to get a couple pictures. And we kind of started talking under our breath about ways to move it, because, you know, it's kind of a danger with so many kids and dogs. And right, you know, with all the leaves and brush by the trail, someone could easily step on it. And we didn't really just want to leave it there. So we were kind of talking under our breath because we didn't know that the other guy there, we didn't know what he would think if we started discussing plans to catch it. But he heard us and he was like, all right, guys, be safe. And he walked off and left us, and we're like, okay, awesome. So we were trying to figure out what to do. We didn't really want to kill it, and we didn't have a good way to kill it either. So we thought the best option would be to relocate it. But we didn't want to be carrying it down the trail because that would cause quite a commotion. So we were discussing, well, we could put it in our backpacks, but we didn't really like that idea either. And then we're like, well, we've got a lunchbox. And it was probably like 3 inches tall and 8 inches long.
It's like a metal or fabric or insulated lunchbox fabric?
It was a fabric insulated lunchbox, yeah. And so, I mean, we had our lunch in it, but it wasn't that hot of a day. So we took our lunch out and we stuck it in our backpack.
Wait, how did you catch it, though? How did you catch it?
Well, we had to get the lunchbox ready first. It was full of our lunch. And so then I was like, okay, we need a fork stick. We were kind of trying to keep an eye on the snake, too.
Sorry, I thought you said... I'll skip this part. I thought you said something about the... So go ahead, give me an intro.
So I found a fork stick And I was trying to whittle it down to the right length so I could put it over its head so it couldn't slip its head underneath. And the nice thing about pit vipers, poisonous snakes, is, and this is also one way to tell them apart from non-poisonous snakes, is how big their head is in comparison to the neck, which is really an advantage when you're trying to catch one to keep their head from slipping out. But anyway, I got me a nice forked stick, and I reached over and pried the snake down, but I kind of got it in the middle of its body, so its head could still move, and it could still strike, like, at least a foot, and so it wasn't safe to grab it. But every time I picked up the stick, it would try to slither farther away, and all I had on was sandals, so I was making sure I didn't get my feet within striking distance. And again, it was a pretty calm snake, which is good. It wasn't really that aggressive. So I was trying to hold it down, though, and I was like, okay, I need another forked stick, because every time I picked my stick up, it would start moving, and I needed one stick to hold it in place, and another stick to get on its head.
What was Lydia doing during this time?
She was trying to grab sticks for me. Uh-huh. So she finally found a stick, and she was trying to whittle it down, but one end was longer, and I was still trying to hold the snake, and then I felt bad holding it down for so long, but anyway, she finally got the stick in okay condition, so I used that stick to hold it down, and then I put the other stick right behind its head, and I kind of held it there for 10 seconds or so to make sure it couldn't wiggle loose, and then I reached down and grabbed it behind the head and picked it up, and it was a big snake. I was surprised how fat it was. Like, it was quite a large snake.
Do you think it was maybe pregnant?
I don't know. Either that or it had a large meal. The thing is, though, it wasn't large in one particular spot as much as its...
Like a large meal.
Its whole body was pretty large. So, it was a pretty heavy snake. Anyway, so my friend snapped a couple pictures real quick of me holding it, and then we're like, all right, we've got a snake and we've got a lunchbox, but how do we put it in without getting bitten? So we thought, okay, well, we'll just have to coil it up in the lunchbox and then let go of it while we've got a stick holding its head down, and then zip it up as much as we could, and then just try to jerk the stick out really quick and zip it closed before the snake, and hopefully it wouldn't stick its head out right after. So that's what we did, and it worked. And
okay. You coiled it up.
We coiled it up, put its head in the middle, and then use a stick.
And how did you close the zipper? Because wouldn't your hand be right next to the mouth?
Well, we had the stick holding its head down while we zipped it.
Okay.
And then we zipped all the way around, so it was just like,
and then pulled the stick out.
Like an inch opening where the stick was, and then we jerked the stick out and zipped that up real close. And then we high-fived each other, and we were like, wow, this is so crazy. I mean, my friend and I have gotten into so many crazy adventures, but we're like, having a rattlesnake in a lunchbox, that's kind of the top of the list there. And so anyway, we were pretty happy, but we were trying to zip it up real quick, and we saw some other people coming down the trail, and we're like, okay, we better keep moving, because we don't want them to be like, what's going on, are you guys doing drugs or something here? So we were walking down the trail with it, and there, the trail, it's like 2 miles to the bathtub swimming hole spot, but then there's a longer loop that's like a 5-mile loop, and we're like, well, if we let it off way up on top of the mountain, there's a lot less traffic up there, so it's less likely to bite someone. So we just took it along with us, but we started getting worried that it didn't have enough ventilation, because it was a cooler, and it's like a leak-proof cooler, and it was plastic on the inside, so you could wipe it out. Yeah. We're like, we didn't want it to suffocate. So we started looking in our backpacks, and she had a first aid kit. We had several large safety pins, so we safety pinned about 2 inches of it closed, and then we unzipped it safety pinned the zipper pull so it couldn't open any farther. So we had like a 2-inch area that was held closed by the safety pins, but there was still a small space for air. And then we pried a couple twigs in there so that some air could flow back and forth. And then we went on our way. We went swimming and...
You just left it with your shoes left him, or whatever.
Yeah, I left him with our shoes and tried not to talk about it when other people were there because I didn't want them to freak out. But I was like, I hope no one tries to open it for any reason. But yeah, my family was coming later and we also had some strawberries in my backpack because I stopped by to get some fresh strawberries at a farm on the way there, and I was like, if I tell my brother, hey, we've got strawberries, he'll probably run straight to the cooler and open it up. And I was like, that'd be a disaster. So anyway, but we decided to name him because, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Did you sex it too? You know it was a him?
No, we didn't. We just assumed. So we named it Archibald. Mm-hmm. And it was actually kind of fun. It was like having a pet along. We we thought about feeding him some salami, but snakes can go a long time between meals, so we figured he'd be okay. But he was pretty chill for the most part, but you could tell when he was running his head along the top of the cooler trying to find a way out. And also when we walked, we kind of held him out away from us, which I'm sure made us look a little suspicious in the trail. But we didn't want our legs or anything to be brushing against the edge of the cooler in case the snake struck at us. But anyway, we're like, well, if anyone tries to mess with us, we'll be like, oh, you better not. We got a rattlesnake in our lunchbox. So, yeah, we ended up not letting him go out on that loop because there are still people out there and we still didn't want him to end up biting anybody. And we didn't want to let him go on the way back either on someone's farm because if he bit an animal or a person, you know, we didn't want that to happen either. So we took him up to a landfill near where we live where it's just acres and acres of a big field and it's not really farmed or there's not many people that go up there. So we figured it was a pretty safe place to let him go. So I tied a string to the zipper pull and under the safety pins and opened it up and he went on his way rattling his tail. So
did it rattle when it was inside the lunchbox?
No, it didn't. Huh. Well, it did at the very end a couple times, but on the trail it didn't. Yep.
So, like, when your hands are messing with the safety pin or tying the string to the zipper, like, did you feel like
it was a little scary, yeah. Because I mean, his fangs are pretty long.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
This is Abby Lincoln with Afro Blue.
Shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, afro blue. Elegant boy, beautiful girl, dancing for joy, delicate whirl, shades of delight, cocoa hue. Rich as the night, afro blue. Two young lovers face to face with undulating grace. They gently sway, then slip away to some secluded place. Shades of delight, cocoa hue. Rich as the night, afro blue. whispering trees echo their sighs, passionate pleas, tender replies, shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, afro blue. Lovers in flight, upward they glide, burst at the height, slowly subside, shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, afro blue. And my slumbering fantasy assumes reality until it seems it's not a dream. The two are you and me, shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, afro blue.
Ever living, ever faithful, ever sure. And peace shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, because he's king of things that can kill and drive Judah. Yeah, he's the origin of the Sabbath, and the Sabbath is our only future. Hey, hey. And now the people shall know that we trust the far eye, they shall no longer suffer. Love is all. The earth shall replenish for the better. And now the children shall behold the glory and goodness Rastafari have to offer. Seek ye first the kingdom of Selassie, and all will be added. The whole world shall see the Lamb upon his throne, comfy conquer the beast. Then shall the people rejoice in the name of Rastafari and be meek. Oh yeah, oh yeah. The world shall see the Lamb upon his throne, comfy conquer the beast. Then shall the children rejoice and war of his cease. The leaders of the world derived that negligence, began deceiving the people. Oh, after getting their anxious desire, they resort to doing evil. In a ill-mannered, unruthless fashion, they keep doing wrong, not considering life. With their nuclear ammunition, they destroy our nation, and that no right. Rastafari says, whole world a go see. Then shall the people rejoice in the name of King Selassie and be me. Oh yeah, oh yeah. The whole world shall see ya. The Lord that won the throne where I lose his every seal. Oh, oh, oh. Then the people shall rejoice and all war offices. Never know, say a King Selassie rule the heart and the soul. Come listen words, send my sons and my daughters from afar off, who call by my name and live by my words. Yeah, only love can save us. It was love that has made those fire fi burn down to blame us. Yeah, we are receiving anointed, we come freedom united. Hey, he's a blessed I would do. Let Rastafari be crowned. Want to be old King Alpha and Black Queen Omega, who are sit up on the throne. Hey, then I say to myself, let the praises begin and let
the trumpet sound. Rastafari name in the village Babylon go down. Oh yeah, go. Then the verse I see, the lamb upon his throne where I lose the seven seas. Then the people shall rejoice in Selassie and the earth shall be near. Hey, 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 the verse I see, the lamb upon his throne where I conquer the beast. Then shall the children rejoice in the name of Emperor. I say, I.
This is out there. I'm Ruthie Woodring. If you want to hear any archived editions, they're online at weatherbeard.com/out-there-archive. This is WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. The studio clock says it's 3:31. And the next clip I have is, I have something else I wanted to say about the snakes. I was looking on the website of a compost collection service, and one of their little pieces of advertising was, we save you the trouble of composting at home, so you don't have to worry about rats, raccoons, and snakes. And I thought, snakes? Has anyone seen a snake in a compost pile? I don't know. I never heard of it. I never seen one. If there's a snake, well, maybe if you've got mice or rats, then the snakes would come, maybe. Snakes. I found a 7-foot black snake skin when I was in Kentucky a couple of weeks ago. I was going out the back door one day and I opened up the back door and one was lying on the threshold. I'm not going to get into the snake stories right now. Okay, so my next clip here is an interview with the next door neighbors in Chenoa, Kentucky. Next door means like a quarter mile away. And they started the soap making business during COVID. They explained it in the interview, but I believe that when I was editing that clip, I didn't get them saying that because there was a lot of material and I brain is fried in the heat or something. But yeah, they started this business during COVID and now they're making soap called Pokeberry Holler. That's not the right clip.
Hi, my name is Pam Parton.
Hi, I'm Abigail Hurst.
Y'all are related?
Yes, we're sisters. We sound alike.
You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Jason Parton. I'm Pam's husband.
All right. Tell me about your business.
Pokeberry Holler Creations. Right now, we're making soap. Soap is our number one product right now. But later on, we hope to expand into other products. But we make cold process soap.
What's that mean, cold process?
Cold process means that you mix water and lye with oils and you don't have to put it in a crock pot or on the stove to heat it up. Mm-hmm. The lye and oils heat up together and form soap. We do have to heat our oils sometimes to melt the oils down because coconut oil and palm oil are solid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we do have to warm those up, but we kind of let everything cool down. They're like with 5 or 10 degrees within the same temperature, and then we mix them together.
You won't have to heat up that coconut oil that came in the mail today.
No,
definitely not.
No, Mother Nature heated it.
So whose idea was this? How did this come about?
Well, I'm a respiratory therapist, And I went to the doctor, and the doctor gave me some bad news about my back. So I don't really know how much longer I'm going to be able to work. So I started thinking of ways that if I wasn't able to work anymore, how I could make money. And I wanted to do what they call wax tarts or candle melts with soy wax. I just thought that was just a little something to piddle in. And then Pam comes through and says, you know what would really sell? Homemade soap. Mm-hmm. So then we started doing our research. And it just kind of went from there. And then Jason helped us get our logo and everything. He does most of our labeling and our stickers and all that.
How did you know that soap would sell?
Like going to different events, and women love things that smell good. Mm-hmm. And will pay good money for lotions and soaps. And so I just throw the ideal out and we went with it.
Uh-huh. How did you think of the name, the Pokeberry Holler?
Well, we came up with a list of names. I mean, I came up with everything you could think of, like where we live, where we grew up on Lower Laurel Fork. You know, we had Laurel in there, we had Lower in there, and we had Fork, and we were just like throwing names out. And we were trying to be true to our roots. So we just kept on and on going back and forth. And Pam was like, you know what we really have a lot of is pokeberries. Uh-huh. And it just went from and we also wanted holler in there because we're hillbillies.
Yeah.
We grew up in a holler.
We grew up in a holler. So that had to be in our name. And, you know, we wanted to stick close to something that, you know, represented Kentucky.
Yeah.
So.
Can you give some examples of some of the names of your soaps, the scents of your soaps?
Well, Jason?
Well, we have different lines. We have, you know, just the straight, run-of-the-mill soap. And then we also have a moonshine blend that really has Kentucky Bell County moonshine in it.
Is that legal?
Well, we won't
you
say
you can make it yourself. There's no law.
No, I don't make it myself. But and I won't disclose where I got the moonshine at. But we do get moonshine. It's local. When we go through the process on it, all of the alcohol is actually boiled off.
Yeah,
you know, but it does have moonshine in it. And I help with the Bell County Tourism. Put on help with the music shows here. So I have a group of friends, and most of these scents have a name attached to flavors that they like of different drinks. Uh-huh. And so it's like Bill Keys has Bill's Peach Moonshine. Then we have an artist, his name is Eric Bolander. He comes down. He likes black cherry, so his was the first one we done with moonshine, and it's black cherry moonshine. Mm-hmm. But then we have also some goat's milk. We were doing goat's milk.
We're getting ready to do some more goat's milk.
Hopefully, we can use some of your brother Chris's goat's milk.
That's yeah, we're getting ready to get some fresh.
Yeah. Nice. we definitely want to support our locals.
We're all about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely want to support everybody. We also have a hemp soap made out of hemp seed oil.
What ingredients are you able to source locally?
Well, really right now, the only ingredients that we can source locally are the moonshine and the goat's milk. Everything else we have to order online because it's olive oil, castor oil, coconut oil, palm oil, and
sweet almond oil.
The palm oil is, what is that word they call it? Responsibly or something, resourced.
Yeah.
You know how they were doing palm farming and it was destroying the rainforest. Yeah. And then they had like the runoff and it was just destroying the lakes and the rivers. Well, we don't buy that. Mm-hmm. We buy palm oil from people that do it the right way. Mm-hmm. Because we definitely don't want any wildlife hurt or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Because we're all big animal lovers too, as you could tell from Rowdy. he's in there in the crate. He was the one that was crying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's what, 6 days old?
Yeah, he's 6 days old.
He's grabbing the bottle feed. So,
yeah. So we don't want the wildlife hurt.
I want to ask you about the men's sense and the women's sense, because I'm not used to the division of sense.
Okay. With our scents, like sometimes we've got one soap that is made to measure and it's a men's fragrance by Gucci, and we have Kentucky bourbon beard soap and we have rustic woods and rum beard soap, and it's, you know, it's geared more toward the guys, but like the recipe for the beard soap you can use on your skin, and I'm not gonna lie, I tried out. Because I'm not going to sell somebody something that I wouldn't use. So I always try it out. And you could actually use it to bath with. And then, like, with our fruity fragrances, they can be either or.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we have some Juicy Couture, which is a perfume that we made a soap out of, you know. But anybody can use whatever scent they want to.
Is the beard soap specially good for, like, lathering?
We are working on a shampoo bar that doesn't have like the laurel sulfate and everything in it. That's in the works, but you know, we're gonna have to do the recipe, make it, and then we're all gonna have to take it and try it on our hair and see what it looks like. So we don't know if we're gonna end up with a greasy mess or a good, you know, a really good recipe, but it's just trial and error.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be able to have a bar of soap to wash hair with and not have to buy like a plastic bottle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it'd be easier to handle in the shower too.
Yeah. What about how different, how do you know about like making other sorts of soaps, like laundry, like detergents? Is that like a totally different thing?
Well, the only thing with making the laundry detergent is we have to be careful with the HE washers, because sometimes some of that soap, I've not tried to make a liquid soap, but I've thought about doing a laundry detergent that's like the borax and the washing soda, with like the soap scraps that we have, just grind them up and put it in. But then again, you've got to be careful with those HE washers, because you know, we don't want to tear anybody's washing machine up. So that may be in the future. We may be able to do a liquid soap, because we're getting ready to do a liquid hand soap.
That's cool.
We've also made some of the old-fashioned lye soap as well. It's just lye and lard. But that's basically all it is. And you know, we've got it on hand too. If people want it, it's cool.
Yeah, that's been a learning experience, because it acts totally different than the vegetable oil soap. Yeah, it acts totally different.
It sets up, some of it sets up so firm that when you go to the process, it just crumbles.
So we're
trying to find that happy medium with it.
Yeah, we're working on that right now, because I'm not real big on putting the animal fat in it, but a lot of people like that old-fashioned lye soap made with the lard and the lye, because they think it's, you know, good for poison ivy and things like that. So so we're gonna try.
Yeah, my first soap making venture, I got some grease. Well, I'm really into, like, I'm a trash hauler, okay, and so I like to scavenge anything and everything. So I'm like, oh, I got some, you know, Red Devil lye left over sitting under the kitchen sink that I'm probably not gonna use. And I can get some grease from the grease pit behind the Chinese restaurant. I made some soap, and it smelled like Chinese restaurant grease. Anyway, an alternative to that is Pokeberry Holler.
Hi, my name is...
That was my next door neighbors in Chenoa, Kentucky, Bell County, Kentucky. That interview was from a few weeks ago when I was there. And Pokeberry Holler Creations. Here's some Joan Prine. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio.
Mm-hmm. thinking lately about the people I meet. The car wash on the corner and the hole in the street. The way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet. I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us and we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. In the army, but I never dug a trench. Used to bust my knuckles on a monkey wrench. I go to town and drink, give the girls a pinch. I don't think they ever even noticed me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us and we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. And we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and a whistle, whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. When we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again, again, again. On my very first job, I said thank you and please. They made me scrub a parking lot down on my knees. Then I got fired for being scared of bees. They only give me 50 cents an hour. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. And we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and a whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on the dish. When we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again, again, again. Oh, Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us and we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven.
All right, the last clip I have here on Out There is with Priya Green, who I encountered when I was hauling trash last week riding through East Hampton.
My name is Priya Ned Carney Green, and I'm an artist. I live in Springfield, and I'm working on this mural right now.
And this mural is on, this is Mechanic Street?
Mechanic Street, yeah, right behind the Manhan Rail Trail.
How did you come to be involved in it?
I was approached by someone on the East Hampton Cultural Council, Rachel Phillips, and she contacted me in 2020 saying that, you know, she wanted to work with me. There was some grant funding for public art. And so we've kind of been talking about this for, you know, several months, and she was scoping out walls. She found out that the owners of East Hampton Feed wanted to have a mural on the back of their building. So here we are. Here I am painting it.
Do you know about the design process, like how it was made or created?
Yeah.
Or?
We knew that we wanted to find some kind of intersection between my work and, you know, something that kind of overlapped with the business, since this is a agricultural type of store. They sell animal feed and garden supplies. So I had some of my work that has flowers and floral themes in it. So we kind of decided together that that would be the perfect intersection between my work and what they would want on their building. And so from there, I just kind of designed something that looks very similar to work that I have been doing, and just kind of made it custom for this wall. Originally, I was only going to paint like the very right hand portion of the wall. And then we decided, no, it needs to be really big. We need to like have it be the whole wall. So it makes a really big impact. And I'm glad that we made that decision.
Well, I'm excited to see what it is. I can't really tell so far. How long do I have to wait?
So I'm hoping that Friday will be my last day of painting. So I just have a few more days left of painting details. So definitely by next week it should be done.
We're recording this on Wednesday, June 23rd, 24th? Do you know what today is?
23rd.
Today's the 23rd, Wednesday, June 23rd. So by the week of the 30th, whatever. First week of July it should be done?
Yep, yeah.
How long have you been working on it?
Since Friday, the 18th. I've been here every day. All day, every day, even when it was raining.
Oh, wow. Well, how do you work in the rain?
I was working while it was drizzling, which is fine, but I was like, had planned that as soon as it started downpouring, I would be out of here. So I was all ready to leave once it started downpouring.
Well, because this building, I don't see a gutter on it.
Yeah, it doesn't really have one. No.
And it doesn't have much of an overhang at all. It's just maybe like 5, 6 inches, maybe.
Yeah. So some of the paint I did yesterday did get washed off slightly, but for the most part, I got a lot of painting done, even in the rain.
Wait, so you've painted this entire wall?
Well, I had help the first few days.
Because this wall's huge. Like,
it is huge. I mean, if I had to do this by myself, it would definitely take more than a week.
Yeah. Do you know the dimensions of this wall?
I think that it's, I want to say 80 feet long. And probably about 20 feet tall.
Yeah. So this is a, like corrugated metal wall.
Yeah.
Have you painted on metal before? How does this shape, the curvy shape, how does this affect you?
That's a good question. It's been a challenge, because, you know, I tend to want to go super detailed with my work. But the corrugated metal kind of makes it difficult to get really detailed, so I just have to kind of work with it. Every mural has its quirks like this, so there's always some kind of problem solving that has to happen on the spot. So this is no different.
So you have other murals around the area that you've painted?
My husband Andre is also an artist.
Oh, Green?
Yeah, Andre Green. Do you know him?
No. Well, I don't think I know him, but I've seen his name in front of City Hall in downtown Northampton.
Yeah. He did one of the murals on the pavement, I think, in Northampton last year.
Yeah.
But we have a mural. We have a few murals in Springfield. That's where we live. We did one of the murals for the Fresh Paint Mural Festival in 2019. That's on Taylor Street in Springfield. And we have a few others. One outside of the former Bing Art Center, and a couple others downtown. So, yeah, we have a few other murals in the area.
This is
my first big solo project.
How did you get into painting murals?
That's a good question. We sort of started because we both teach, so it was kind of like a natural progression to kind of work with kids. And then once we got a couple of murals under our belts, we started just doing them on our own. We started getting invited to do murals. So, and I'm a painter outside of this. I don't really do this full time. So, but I normally work on canvases in the studio. So that's my main thing that I do.
With the murals, it's such a great opportunity to spread a message.
Yeah.
Can you say anything about that?
Well, this mural is called Bloom, and I feel like it's kind of come at the perfect time where we're all sort of emerging out of this COVID thing and like, you know, coming out into the open again. So I feel like, you know, it kind of feels like a time where people are just craving to be outside and you know, seeing people again, talking to people again. So that's kind of, you know, what I feel when as I'm making this, and what I hope it kind of brings while people see it. That's my phone ringing.
That was Priya Annette Carney Green painting a mural, big mural in East Hampton on the side of East Hampton Feed and Seed, I think, on Mechanic Street. You can see it if you're riding down the Manhattan Rail Trail. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Madness Radio coming up at 4 o'clock. I'm going to go out with a song. This is a friend of mine made this song. This is called Dumpster Flex.
Headed down to the dumpster with my Louis Vuitton. Cigarette out with those sneakers that I found to put on. Nike grandpa is my outfit, cost low as they pass. And no, no commando, I got ego on my bum. My eBay account is my only degree. Yeah, I live off of trust and that's what I bro believe. Two thirds of me is water, but the rest is your waste. It's just lucky you as waste is treasure to me.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
Now look at what I found just the other day. Now okay, why would someone go and throw this away? It's straight up new with tags and it's never been worn. No stains, no marks, no smell, no dirt, no torn. It's a shirt, guys, they don't expire. Besides, expiration dates aren't made by liars. There's planned obsolescence in this whole expense. I'm diving daily here to give shirts like these just one more chance.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
Every morning I get up out of sheets I found. I brush my teeth every day on these brush that I found. Get a shave with my razor, guess what we found. Wash my hair with shampoo that yup I found. Put on clothes that were lost and now are found. Eat my brunch, it's just cereal but it's free, I found. Pack a lunch from the mini fridge, all found. Hop on a really nice bike that I wish I found. Check my Craigslist app for the buyers I found. Watch TV on a couch of both the which I found. Grab some chai at the shop with your cards I found. Yeah, I think I get the point.
Is that too much?
Hey, no, I'm not a hoarder. I live my life with extreme order. When I get a good haul, I know I'm blessed. I give thanks to God for about to for my best. Diving isn't just about error and trial. You see, diving is a full-on living lifestyle. Practice what you preach, please don't put it there. If my dumpster fashion catches you unaware.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
I got my ego from Eureka, you just think about that. Next time you trash on something, you best call me up stat. I want more competition just to pull them away. I am the predator, your dumpster the prey. I go dumpster diving, that's no metaphor. It's an art I mastered, so now I mentor. If you think you're better, then I challenge thee. A duel, loser must eat the 6-month old brie.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
Now it's Isaac Andreas with Dumpster Flex. Isaac's a student at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And that's it for Out There today. Stay tuned for Madness Radio coming up very soon.